Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods, with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Tony Stragis, original set designer.
Once upon a time.
Tony Stragis designed the scenery for the original Broadway and Old Globe productions of Into the Woods, for which he received a Tony nomination, as well as the original production of Sondheim and Lapine's Sunday in the Park with George, for which he won the Tony Award. His other Broadway design credits include Enchanted April, Golden Child, Shimada, I Hate Hamlet, Artists Ascending a Staircase, Dangerous Games, Rumors, Long Day's Journey into Night, Harold and Maude, A History of the American Film, and Timbuktu.
Of course, you famously were the set designer for the previous Lapine-Sondheim collaboration, Sunday in the Park with George. And as a matter of fact, my inspiration for this podcast was drawn largely from that wonderful oral history of Sunday in the Park with George that James Lapine wrote, putting it together, which featured some fascinating pieces of conversations between he and you about the development of that production. And so I guess I'm curious, in the context of that relationship, at that moment in your career, when did the knowledge that there was such a thing as Into the Woods come to you?
I don't remember. I know James was talking about writing another years ago with Steve, and it would be about fairy tales, and I can't remember what information James gave me, but I remember making an elaborate sketch. I mean, he talked about, I don't think there was a script yet, but he talked about putting these different fairy tales together and all these characters from the different fairy tales joining up and telling a complicated story. And so I did this complicated drawing, but it was kind of realistic in a way, and I don't have it. The drawing is at the Lincoln Center Performing Arts Library, but it was the first drawing that I did kind of in relationship to the piece that James was creating. And when James had a country house, an old farmhouse upstate New York, and I would go up there with him and his wife, and I would do the gardening, and we would walk to a butcher shop that was close by, but you had to go through the woods to go to the butcher shop. We'd go to the butcher shop to get beef to make burgers outside, and of course the walk was the way you walk through a woods. It's very uneven, and you go up little hills and dales and all that stuff, and as we talked about this show, I mentioned to James, well, look how we're walking. I mean, when you walk in the woods, you're kind of walking differently. And I've been using curves when I did the Midsummer Night's Dream at the Yale Rep, and I used a lot of curves in that. And then I did Timbuktu, which was a remaking of the musical Kismet.
Yeah.
And the whole floor was like one huge sand dune. So I became attached to this curve idea, but it seemed to be a really good idea for Into the Woods. because it also, James, what he likes in a musical, like it's Sunday in the Park with George, he likes to be able to have a lot of options and to be able to change the stage all the time, all seem constantly kind of moving. And so all these little hills and dales on the stage were able to pivot and go upstage and downstage, and so that he could change the picture all the time. But when he first asked me, when I first got the script, well, it's very difficult. There were two things that were difficult. How do you put a forest on stage? because trees are extremely beautiful and complicated, but phony trees on stage or in the movies look just like that, like phony. So I saw this, Joseph Cornell is one of my favorite artists, and he's the guy who makes these little miniature boxes with different kind of lithographs and feathers, and but he had a box that had real branches in the front, a front of branches. They were all painted silver, and behind it was a doll, and you saw the doll through the silver branches, and that gave me the idea of how to do the forest, because we built these metal traceries, but then we wove real branches, thousands and thousands of branches, into these traceries. They were real branches, and they couldn't be deeper than 6 inches because there were so many of them, and they either flew in and out, or they tracked across the stage, they could only be 6 inches deep. Anyhow, that became the main idea for the forest, and because we were using real branches, and the way we wove them, we really had the beauty of what makes a tree. And then the other parts that were, James, we it was hard to figure out how to do the cottages when we did the show in San Diego. James wanted it to be more presentational, like it had to do too with the animals. I said, how do you see these animals? And he said, well, like they're soap animals. You know, there's soaps that are in the shape of animals. And
wow.
So that was kind of a simplistic look for the animals. And so we went with this simplistic look of the scenery. It was more presentational, not so realistic.
Mm-hmm.
But we used the branch idea, but when we decided to go to New York, the producers wanted it much more elaborate, and so we did make it much more elaborate, but it was again the same ideas of these branches, and the other thing that influenced the design, I guess we looked at a lot of fairy tale drawings, when we went to Broadway, we've tried to figure out how to do the cottages. So I looked at Durer, the artist Durer, Albrecht Durer, and his drawings were really incredible because they looked like fairy tales, especially the backgrounds where there's all these different trees and stuff. And so somehow the idea came of how to do the cottages for Broadway was having this drop that was made up of Durer drawings, but I reassembled them and made the cottages. There were three cottages, and then there were paths leading up to a very complicated forest. It was all based on Durer drawings, and at the top of the forest, I think there was a castle or something. And but then three panels opened up where the cottages were, the faces of the cottages were the cottages were drawn on these faces. And they opened up and were in the interior of the cottage. And that was that was a really great way to do the cottages. And the last thing that influenced the design, the backdrops for these, the first act and the second act. I've used this before too. I needed to do one main drop that represented a tree, and I used this before. I photographed a piece of fan coral from the sea, and I redrew it to make it more look like a tree, and I used it in Timbuktu, and then later I used it in, I did a ballet in Sweden, I used it for a backdrop in Capalia. But anyhow, so I had this silhouette, it was about, the applique was on scrim, and that was behind all of these traceries of trees, tree branches. And in the second act, what influenced me, again, I was using a fan coral, but it was destroyed. It was broken apart. But I found this picture of the forest fires in California, and the whole ground and the stumps of the trees were all black, and the sky went from a bright orange and up into a purplish color. And I use exactly that for the backdrop for the second act. And it's interesting because if you look at the backdrop for the second act, when the World Trade Center was destroyed and there were pictures of all the iron left standing, and it looked exactly like our tree in the second act of Sunday in the Park, Into the Woods.
Wow.
So those were the main influences. And as you, if you watch Into the Woods, you see how James uses all this stuff. I mean, they're always moving and turning and twisting. And then for a relief, we wanted for the end of the first act something just to give a relief from all this branch stuff. And so it's the wedding scene. And so I got a book on lace, and I looked at all these laces, and I took a pattern, maybe one or two, or combined a couple patterns, and we have this white lace drop, which came in, and Richard Nelson lit it beautifully, but it was a big change from all of these tree branches, you know. So that's basically kind of how it worked. I mean, how it came about, and I would show all these ideas to James, so we work pretty close together on how, forming, you know, what it's going to look like. And then we give him a very elaborate model, and he takes the model and he'll work with his assistants with the model, and they'll play around with it, you know. And I think they had all the moves laid out before we got into the theater, you know, how they would move these trees and all these different formations. That's the value of the model.
Yeah. People have talked a lot about how, as great as the show looks on the American Playhouse broadcast, that there was just so much beauty in the way the lights hit those trees that can't be conveyed on this, video from 1989. Was that something that you had in mind in the design, that these were going to create such beautiful effects in the light, these branches?
Well, yeah, because of the texture. Because what we did in San Diego, as I said, it was, we used branches again, but they were in panels. The panels were rectangular, and they had a tree-like tracery, but they were contained in rectangular panels because James wanted it to be presentational, not kind of realistic.
Yeah.
So we knew that these branches, the texture of the branches were going to be spectacular with hitting when they're hit by lights. And so, and the branches, the colors ranged from autumnal colors to summer colors, and they were all painted first white, and then they went over with really rich dyes, layer and layer of dyes, and then we went over with gold glazes. And in the, for the burnt out trees in the second act, they were painted blackish, and then we went over with silver glazes so that they were still beautiful, but they had no life anymore. Didn't have any color. And we used big pieces of driftwood. There's scenes where people are sitting on these beautiful real driftwoods that we found, you know, at agricultural places, and we painted over them with glazes, and so it was beautiful. I thought, I mean, everybody thought too that it did look very beautiful, and it did convey the feeling of a forest, you know.
Yes, I mean, everybody thought that. I was talking to Jacqueline Dankworth, who was Cinderella in the London production, not by James Lapine, not by you, but her mother, Cleo Lane, had been the witch on the national tour, and she said that Cleo's comment when she saw it in London was, "It looked better in America." I'm curious, besides the beauty, there are so many special effects that happen with the magic and the transformations. And how did you navigate those from the design perspective?
Well, we had a magician come in to, like in the first act where the witch is sitting on a chair and the chair, she rises up on the chair.
Mm.
Well, a magician helped figure that out. I mean, it was, the chair was attached to a metal rod at one end, and the actress had to be in a certain position to hide that rod, and the chair lifted up in the air, and Bernadette was on the chair. So then the traps, there was a lot. We used to call the basement of the Martin Beck Pittsburgh. There was so much mechanism down there. For the tower, when we were before we designed the show, we had to go down into the Martin Beck basement and measure everything because we needed to know how high we could go with things coming up from the floor. And we had the tower come up. We designed a tower that would fit in the Martin Beck basement. But when they discovered, the tower wouldn't fit in the Martin Beck basement. So they had to, they would have to dig a hole in the basement to give us more room to make the tower tall enough to look like a tower.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started digging a hole in the Martin Beck basement, they discovered a river underneath the Martin Beck theater. And so they had to fill up the hole. And so what we did, the technical people said, well, let's make the tower telescope, which that's what it does, you know.
Yeah.
So, and the beanstalk coming up, well, I wasn't sure how to make this beanstalk rise. I mean, go all the way up from the floor to beyond the proscenium. And so Pete Feller, who was a technical director and a good friend of mine, he said, well, what we could do is if you have the choreography going on and would just drop in fishing line that's clear plastic, thin fishing line with attached to the metal thing that you put on a fishing line to throw out
you got
a sinker.
See? Yeah.
And I thought, and James thought, oh, well, that's terrible. Everybody's going to see that. And he said, well, not if you have the choreography working and you have the audience's attention on what the actors are doing.
Mm.
And he was right. I mean, that's all, the beanstalk, this fishing line came down with the sinker on. You never saw it. They hooked it up down in the basement. The beanstalk was in three sections. It kind of was telescoped and it went up. And you never saw the sinker or the line. One of the things that was a problem, I think having the giant's head fall down on the stage, first of all, we only had about a foot to make the giant's head. I feel we shouldn't show that, but James wanted the giant's head, and so the sculptors at the Costume Armor, the head was huge, but we only had like a foot of depth, and so they did a wonderful job with all of this yarn, I just felt it didn't look enough like a head because there wasn't enough room to, but when we were having it fly in, or it didn't fly in, it came on an angle. It was on, like a rail, a train crossing thing that comes down, it comes down an angle. James wanted it to bounce off the floor, like to really hit the stage floor. like to give the thud. And we did it once or twice, and Pete Feller, the technical director, said, stop it, you're going to destroy the stage. And so it would come down, and before it would hit the ground, it would just kind of stop and then kind of kiss the stage. But the way James wanted it, it would have broken the stage because it was very heavy. I mean, so those are.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUPS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUPSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
That was really great, going through the traps and the birds. Well, the birds, they became a pain in the neck. I mean, when we first started them, they looked really good. I mean, I didn't know how to do them either, you know, but we'd make tests up at the shop and they were vibrators that would make each bird like vibrate, and the wings were made so that the joints would had an elasticity, so they would, as the vibrator vibrated the string that they were attached to, the wings would kind of give a flipping.
Wow. Thing.
But it was near the end, some of them would be flipping their wings and some weren't, you know, but so that's about it. I mean, the cow, we had three cows because they had to do different things. And I mean, the cow that's eating the corn, and the actress, I think it was Joanna Gleason, would put her hand inside the cow and her hand would be in a cushion or that looked like a tongue, and that she would be with her hand eating the stuff that they were feeding it.
Oh, wow.
There was one cow that was covered with dust because he was the one that was painted, you know.
Mm.
Oh, and then the death of the cow, that was funny, because it was just a jack on the cow's hoof. And when the cow died, I mean, the jack opened up and knocked the cow over. But it was very funny. And also the cow, having the handle on the cow, when Chip would grab the cow with his handle and run off, I mean, it was very funny.
Yeah. I mean, were those things, like, for example, the cow that you just came up with in the shop, or was that stuff that that was sort of workshopped in rehearsal?
The first time we did the animals was in San Diego, and they were the first animals that we made. I mean, I drew them, and of course, in the song describes the cow.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, and my drawing, I mean, I incorporated all of the things Steve was saying about the cow. And
right, the lump on her hump.
yeah. And so so those animals were carved by a wonderful carver at San Diego, but I forget his name now. He worked in the prop shop, and he did a beautiful job with the horse and the cow. And then when we went to New York, came into New York, Nino Navolino of Costume Armor, I think we used the cow, one of the cows, I think we used, well, we had to make a couple more cows, I think, and then we had a horses carrying that little carriage when they're going off to the ball, so Nino carved all of that, but it was based on the carvings from the guy who did it in San Diego.
Hmm.
And Nino was a wonderful carver. He's died, but he did all the carvings for the elephant and Phantom of the Opera and the big statue in Miss Saigon. He was a wonderful artist.
And people have talked a lot about, and they had a word for it, but I can't remember, the big set piece that slid on and off that was like a hill that could rotate.
Oh, that was the main platform, yeah. And that was like a hill. And that could go up and down stage and turn around. And I don't know if you remember, at one point when Joanne Gleason is in the woods, the giant is stomping around, and it's when she dies, actually. The part of that main little hill cracks open, it did, at the corner, it just flipped open, and then there was a drop in the back that was, it was based on a photograph of seeing images of a forest, just a silhouette of light coming through leaves, and that was a drop we used a lot in the second act. And that James wanted, when she died, there would be a crash, and he wanted some physical look to happen through she was being crushed by a tree falling down. So what we did was that we just we attached a feathery China silk to the top of the that drop, and when the tree supposedly fell, the magnetic things opened up the things holding the drop, and it just fell down by itself. And I mean, it fell down in a thud. But all these flames, China silk flames, kind of, it happened in a flash. But there was all this movement of this big crash, and there was the big tree that was on the drop that was against the fire sky. So it happened all in a second, but it was a big change for the audience to understand what was going on, except that now the main tree that they had seen all through the first act was not there anymore, and there was what was left was this broken tree kind of thing with the fiery sky.
And what about that tree that Cinderella's mother was inside of? Was that a telescope thing like the tower also?
No, that traveled on, that was again, we had to, we knew we were going into the Martin Beck Theater, so that was designed to fit off stage on that side of the stage, so it didn't come apart or anything, and it remained always, it was designed to fit on the stage, stage right side of the Martin Beck Theater. You know, everything is done to measurements, and so that the tree was pretty big and solid because someone was in it, and there were also doves in that tree that they were animated and they worked really well, so that tree never, all it had to do was track on and track off, and when it went off stage, there was enough room that actors could get around it and everything, so we didn't have to worry about putting it somewhere. It was very heavy too.
Yeah, for all those things that came on and off, was that automated or was this before that era?
Oh no, it was all automated. It was all Sunnyside Park was all automated, and so Into the Woods was too. It's amazing. The automation and the computers, you know, because it makes the scenery move really, really beautifully. I mean, stagehands could move the scenery beautifully too, but sometimes a stagehand could be off or and go too far or or go too soon. The computers seem to be constantly on top of it, you know.
Yeah.
How how these things moved. And because both Sunday in the Park with George, but mainly Into the Woods, there was so much movement of all these pieces twirling and going up and down. And it was the other thing where the guys, the two boys are in the tree, they were floating in there. That had to be, we had to work with Steve and James because they needed a certain amount of time from the previous scene to run off stage and go climb upstairs to get onto a ramp that led up onto that little branch that they're sitting on, and then that branch flew in. But that all had to be done. There had to be enough music and dialogue so that they would be able to have the time to leave the stage and go off stage, climb up, and get on that rig that they sat on, and then they would be lowered in. That all had to be done to the amount of dialogue and music that was going on before that.
Yeah. And with all this stuff, how did you revisit it for the national tour?
Well, yeah, that was a big thing because we couldn't do what we did on Broadway, of course. I mean, we did some of the things. The tower, it didn't come through the floor. Nothing came through the floor because
yeah.
Every theater is different. But so what we did was we used the Durer. So I made all the trees, the moving trees and everything, just the same kind of drawing that is on the preface of the scene with all the cottages and the forest. That was all Durer drawings. I made all the wood trees when they went into the woods, Durer drawings. They were hard covered, but I just used Durer drawings and
instead of real branches.
We couldn't use the real branches because they wouldn't survive, you know.
Mm. And but other than that, did you still have the same like hill that came on and off, and the same tree for?
No. There was. I don't think there was. No, there was none of that, because the tour was. The tour wasn't even a national tour. It was kind of between a national tour and a bus and truck tour.
Oh. So what would have replaced those kind of scenic elements? Was there any sense of levels?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I don't remember now, but I don't think so because we didn't have it's a tour. You every theater is different. Is that where it plays? And so it would be you just couldn't. I mean, to use traps. Every theater is different. Some theaters don't even have traps. So there was no. It was just a flat floor.
Yeah. And I mean, with the whole experience compared to other the rest of your career in theater, what would you say was different about collaborating with James Lapine versus other directors of musicals? Or plays in general?
Well, James is very visual. He was a graphic artist, and so he has a real good sense of vision, of things aesthetically looking, how things should look. I mean, a lot of directors, they leave the design entirely up to you, but James has an input in it, and but some directors are like that too. One of the last shows I did in New York was the Brecht. What is it? It was at this classic stage company, Mother Courage.
Oh yes.
And
with Tanya Pinkins.
What?
That's with Tanya Pinkins.
Yeah. That director. God, I can't remember his name now. He was the artistic director of the Classic Stage.
Oh, was it Brian Kulik?
Yeah, Brian, yeah. But Brian gave me, he made these sketches of, for the whole show of what he wanted. He wanted a truck because he put the show in Africa, because in Africa there's gangs that go around. Well, it's kind of like the guy who was working for Putin, eventually Putin killed. They go around and they terrorize these diamond mines, and also a lot of these chemicals that are used in smartphones and cell phones come from Africa, and there's these gangs and that they try to steal these mines and coerce these mines, like that Russian leader who Putin was working for Putin in Russia. Anyhow, there are bands of these people fighting over these mines, and these chemicals or minerals that are used, that are of great value today in electronics. And so Brian wanted to put this in Africa because there's these gangs, and they go around in pickup trucks, and they have machine guns. And well, we couldn't use a pickup truck because I went all over New York and Brooklyn measuring trucks, and there was none that could fit into the wings of a classic stage. And yeah. So the only thing that would fit would be a Jeep, a Willie Jeep.
Mm.
And so what I had to do was, well, we've had to find a Willie Jeep, but I had to turn the Willie Jeep into a truck. So we got a Willie Jeep and we sawed it in half, and I designed a truck, a top part that we went for an army truck with a canvas top, and the truck was in two sections. Why am I talking about this? Brian made all these drawings, and he with this truck in two parts in mind, and there are drawings with benches where he had a scene with people sitting on the benches, but he had it all drawn out, you know. That doesn't happen all the time. It actually very, very rarely happens. But So each director is different, you know.
Yeah. And do you remember what things James Lapine sort of came to the table with that he had as visual notions for Into the Woods?
Well, I think what happens with directors and designers, with me anyhow, I go to the director and I just listen to what he just talks about the play, or, you know, and then I go and get all this research and pictures and photographs, different artists, and I bring this stuff to the next meeting and we go look at it, and I see how they react to what I'm showing them. And I guess probably what I did with James was show him that photograph of the California fire, and I didn't show him, of course, the Cornell idea. I showed him sculptures of Cornell. And then he says yes or no. The one thing that he did want that when the audience walked in, that there would be three pages of the three main fairy tales that they were portraying, and he wrote down what he wanted to be said in these three big pages.
Mm.
When the audience walked in, there was a drop with three big pages of the three main stories, and James, that all that was James, you know, what he wanted, how the wording and everything.
I've got to go to Lincoln Center and look at that first drawing that you did before there was a script. Do you remember any elements of that drawing?
Yeah, well, the drawing, I know it's a complicated drawing, but it was, I guess I had like three different, kind of tree sections, clumps of trees that they all three turned, three different things turning. They were three turntables, so Jim would react, James would react to that, and so I don't. So somewhere between that and what we finally, maybe he saw that and said, "No, I think when we do this in San Diego, we should be presentational." That's the word he used, presentational. That this is not real. This is storytelling. But then, like I say, when we went to New York, the producer said, no, it's got to be much more elaborate, you know. And so somewhere, I mean, James reacted to all of this, and from that drawing at Lincoln Center, it became something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what an amazing evolution. I'm so grateful for your time, Tony. It's so fascinating to hear about the inception of this show that means so much to so many people now.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I mean, yeah, it was. Yeah, well, working with James and Steve was wonderful, and I mean, losing Steve, it was just really horrible because he was an extraordinary person, and mm-hmm. he was very nice to all of us, and he was a tough guy, but he was so inspiring and gracious. He was so gracious it was really sad that he's gone, but of course he has all his work being shown, and I'm really thankful for James that he got me involved in these shows, you know. Mm.
Well, I'm thankful he got you involved too, because your work was so magnificent and will be inspiring to generations for sure.
Well, I'm glad I had the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went Into the Woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 46 with Kay McLelland, original Florinda and replacement Baker's wife.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.